Cause the Goyim know.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome. It's time to break free. I will be your host for the hour, David Matthew Rock, coming to you live from the constitutional carry state of Arizona via the Patriot broadcast from the trenches, 89.5 FM, Chiloquin, the state of Jefferson. Simulcast on IndianaFreedomTalkRadio.com, the Grow Your Own channel, 107.5 FM, Greenville, South Carolina, Hal Apino's channel, 87.9 FM, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and many more micro-broadcasts and webcasts heard around the world. Take the time to check out the number one source for Patriot news on the web at FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com. If you'd like to contact me via email, I can be reached at DavidMatthewRock@gmail.com. This is a live call-in program. Come on up and share your thoughts and experiences. Unlike the mainstream media, listener participation is appreciated. The call-in number is 641-715-3610. Once connected, you'll be asked for the conference room number, which is 220029 in the pound sign. Hit star 6 to unmute. All right, it is 1:03 p.m. Arizona Mountain Time. It's 104 degrees in Casa Grande, Arizona, mostly sunny with 20% humidity. We've made it. It's another Oy Vey Friday, ladies and gentlemen. And what better way to kick off the weekend than giving the Jewish supremacists who wish to silence all dissent the middle finger? So, what do the Jews, Freemasons, and Satanists all have in common? We will get into it as soon as we return from these messages from our sponsors.
With lies. I try to laugh about it, hiding the Zog from their eyes, cause goys don't cry. Goys don't cry. I would tell Goyim I hate them, but a victim I can't play, while I scream about the bars of soap gas chambers and lampshades. I try to laugh about it, dumb down the goy with fluoride. I try to laugh about it, hiding the hoax from their eyes, cause goys don't cry. Goys don't cry. I would do most anything to get shekels for the yids, while I spray white phosphorus to Palestinian kids. Donate to APEC, have a mitzvah, go fight in Iraq, play at the Wailing Wall. We control the media, Hollywood, and the porno biz, keeping the Goyim distracted with our bread and circuses, cause goys don't.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disastrous situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble, And it's not just the conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Divergent Flavor Labs introduces our all-original e-juice flavor line made from pure 100% kosher USP food-grade ingredients. Whether it's our flavored tobaccos like Calypso or our amazing bakery flavors like Creme de Liumptious, Divergent Flavor Labs handmade all-original flavor line will never disappoint. Available exclusively through VaporsRebellion.com.
Thank you for listening to PBFTT.
Patriot Broadcast from the Trenches, 89.5.
Micro FM.
Chiloquin,
the state of Jefferson.
It's time to break free, live on PBFTT, August 25th, 2017. I'm your host, David Matthew Rock. Thank you for joining me this afternoon. So I pose the question, what do Jews, Freemasons, and Satanists all have in common? And I have a series of short little videos lined up that I'm going to play to answer that question. And they're all available at FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com if you'd like to take a look. Let's dive right into it.
We dreamed to come back to this place, to the Temple Mount, to meet again our God.
The Temple Mount is the seat of God, the place the Lord will choose. Hamakom asher yivchar Adonai Elohecha.
Every day, three times a day, Jews recite this prayer. May it be your will that the temple be speedily rebuilt in our own time.
Did you catch that, folks? So when they go to the Wailing Wall, when all our politicians are going to the Wailing Wall, that's what they're in support of, rebuilding this temple. Let's continue.
It's a prayer they prayed for almost 2,000 years.
But Jews here in Jerusalem are doing more than just praying. Just a few steps away from the Western Wall, rabbis and craftsmen are building what they call a temple in waiting.
Rebuilding the temple.
We're supposed to build the temple, and nothing about that changed. Nothing about that commandment changed.
Chaim Richman is a director at the Temple Institute in Jerusalem.
The Temple Institute is actively engaged in research and preparation for the resumption of the service in the Holy Temple to the extent of actually preparing operational blueprints for the construction of the temple according to the most modern standards.
This menorah is just one of several vessels created for the next temple. It's covered with 95 pounds of pure gold and has a price tag of $2 million.
Piece by piece, the third temple is taking shape, with priest garments, vessels of copper, gold, and silver, and a new generation of Levite priests, specially trained for temple service.
We have enough in place now to resume the divine service and to build the temple. But obviously, a lot of things have to happen in order for this to happen.
Richman isn't the only one who's ready to rebuild.
You actually have blueprints, architectural drawings for the third temple.
3,000 years after King Solomon built the first Jewish temple, another Solomon is laying the foundations for the third.
From the womb of my mother, I have a task and a mission in my life, which is connected with the rebirth of Israel.
Gershon Solomon leads a group called the Temple Mount Faithful. They commissioned these cornerstones for the third temple. The 6-ton stones were consecrated with water from the biblical pool of Siloam, and cut with diamonds.
And why God commanded us not to cut them by iron? Don't forget that these are stones for the house of God. They cannot be like other stones.
For several years, Solomon and his followers tried to place the stones on the Temple Mount. And every year, they were stopped by Israeli police.
Unfortunately, weakness of the Israeli leadership did not allow us to bring the cornerstone to the right place. The end-time temple should be built on the same location of the first and the second temple.
But that location is already occupied. The holiest site for Jews is also the third holiest site for Muslims. And neither side is ready to share.
The Temple Mount, 35 acres of it, is the most explosive piece of territory on the face of the planet.
In 2002, Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat told an Arab newspaper that the Israelis found not a single stone proving that the Temple of Solomon was there, because the temple was not in Palestine at all.
The issue of the temple, it's so sensitive.
Dr. Yusuf Nache is in charge of tourism at the Dome of the Rock. Here's what he had to say when I asked him about the Jewish temple.
It's not an undeniable fact. It is theos. And the political situation, the misunderstanding, the mistrust distorted all the facts.
That is stupid, because the Arabs themselves, they call Jerusalem the place of the temple. And the Golden Dome right behind me, the Dome of the Rock, was built in order to replace Solomon's temple. I think this temple denial is more serious than the Holocaust denial.
To counter this so-called temple denial, Gabriel Barkai is pushing the archaeological envelope. Muslim law forbids any digging on the mount itself. So instead, Barkai's digging through its trash.
We have here the entire history of the Temple Mount.
He and his team are sifting through truckloads of debris, unearthed by bulldozers and discarded by Muslim authorities.
So there could be artifacts in here going back to the first and second temple? And
yes, there are, no doubt.
Among their finds, a Babylonian arrowhead from the fall of Jerusalem in 586 BC, and this 2,400-year-old Hebrew coin, the oldest ever minted in Jerusalem.
Do you think in your lifetime there'll ever be a time when you can actually investigate what's under the Temple Mount?
No, I don't. I'm very pessimistic about it.
Some of the most dramatic traces of temple life have been unearthed here at the Western Wall.
This street was part of the marketplace outside the Second Temple. On the walls, you can still see the marks from the fires that destroyed the temple in 70 AD. And overturned stones still lying where they were thrown from the top of the Temple Mount by the armies of Rome.
On one stone is a Hebrew inscription, "To the place of trumpeting." It's a set of ancient directions to the southwest corner of the temple.
Now, he just said something I found interesting. Part of this end-time prophecy and part of the ritual for the temple involves a silver trumpet. And I'm kind of the opinion a lot of things are just planned out and designed. I think Barack Obama was definitely planned out and designed. So is this Trump character, was he designed, you know, from birth? Was he like put together to play out this role? Is it possible that we could be seeing this moving forward and his name is symbolic? I don't know. We'll continue.
Where trumpeters announced the arrival of the Sabbath 2,000 years ago. Even more intriguing is the part of the Western Wall that's still underground.
Amongst the courses of the Western Wall, I mean the line of stones which we have here, this is the greatest and the most exciting one we have here.
Dan Bahat spent 40 years excavating the tunnels around the Temple Mount. And he says the most compelling case for the temple is yet to be discovered.
I believe that behind this stone is a large arch which forms a storehouse, a big storehouse, which stored all the treasures of the temple. But we don't have till now anyone where those treasures were. And the only possibility is that it must be subterranean somewhere mm-hmm. around the Temple Mount. I believe that it might have been behind this wall.
So do you think it's possible that the treasures are still there?
I hope so. Maybe in the future, when it will be possible to dig, maybe we'll get to that. I say we, it must be my grandchildren, the earliest.
But Bahat's interest in the temple is strictly in its past, not in its future.
There is no chance whatsoever for the third temple. The third temple will be when the Messiah comes, and both of us, Jews and Christians, are waiting for him. So let us see when he comes, what happens. It won't happen before.
Rabbis for centuries did not understand this and in fact argued, well, are we supposed to build the temple and then the Messiah will come? Or are we supposed to wait and then the Messiah will build the temple?
Again, I could hear the voice of God like he's speaking to all of us. I brought you here to build my house. Build my house.
All right, that's it for that video. Let me try and fade it out all nicey nice here. Yay. All right, we're going to jump on over to this next one. Okay. What events will have to happen before the temple is rebuilt? Let's get into it.
The Bible indicates that the Jewish temple will be rebuilt on the Temple Mount after the rapture and during the first part of the seven-year tribulation period. Are there any signs this temple is close to being rebuilt today? In our research in Israel, we discovered that the rebuilding of the Jewish temple is not just talk, but an extremely well-organized plan that is already being implemented by Jews in Israel today.
All right, Jimmy, the temple is going to be rebuilt someday, but it's certainly not in existence now, and it's the most controversial piece of real estate in the world. What's going to happen?
Well, let me just remind everybody of the scriptures. Daniel 9:27, in the midst of the week, that seven-year period of time between the rapture and the second coming of Christ, there has to be a temple there. Jesus confirmed that, Matthew 24:15, when you see the abomination of desolation. Apostle Paul confirmed it, 2 Thessalonians 2:4, Antichrist walks into the temple, the abomination of desolation takes place. And in Revelation chapter 11 and verse 1, John is told to measure the space for the temple. So we have four proof texts. There will be a temple on the Temple Mount. The rapture has to happen. At that point, when the Antichrist appears in the beginning of that seven-year tribulation period, he confirms a peace agreement. The Jewish people lay down their weapons. They think they're at peace. They think the Messiah has come. There's a coalition of nations coming in to the area of Israel to wipe them off the face of the earth. Well, Jesus Christ intercedes. And in Daniel chapter 11 and verse 45, it says that the Antichrist, after the Lord has given the victory to the Jewish people, the Antichrist usurps that victory and tells the Jewish people to put their temple up on the holy mountain of God there in the city of Jerusalem. At that point, they build a temple. The temple is built. It has to be up before the midway point of the tribulation, and it's going to be standing there. They restore the temple sacrifices and everything else. There is one problem, though, John. Everything has been prepared. They have the utensils. They have the men who've studied the priestly duties. I met recently when I was in Israel with the man who is the chairman of the Sanhedrin, the 70 wise Jewish scholars that operate the temple. He said he has his garment hanging in his closet, in his home, ready to put on and report to the Temple Mount. So all the preparations have been made. There's one problem. That gold dome building, the Dome of the Rock, sits on the spot where the temple has to be erected there on the Temple Mount. And I've got to tell you, during the Gulf crisis, when I first moved to Jerusalem, we would hear the siren warning of an incoming scud. Most of us ran into our sealed room, put on our gas mask. The Jews living in the Jewish quarter in the old city of Jerusalem ran to the Temple Mount, started to pray, "Dear God, let one of those scuds hit the Dome of the Rock." Of course, scud is an acronym for sure could use direction because Saddam didn't know where they were going. But I believe that's what's going to happen. In that battle at the beginning of the tribulation period, when these nations are attacking Israel, one of their missiles is going to take down the Dome of the Rock. They put the temple up. I mean, I could just go for the next hour or two about the personalities who believe it's about to be put up. One of my dear friends, an Orthodox Jewish man named Gershon Solomon, he has the cornerstones to put on the Temple Mount to start construction of all that God said will happen during the tribulation period. All the preparations, every player I've talked with, I know I love them, and they're ready to put the temple up. All we need to do is wait for the rapture. The rapture happens first, then all of these things unfold.
Okay, the Jewish temple is put up, and the fact is the Antichrist goes in and desecrates it, the abomination of desolation, and then there's persecution of the Jews, and then we come to the end, the battle of Armageddon, and then you have Jesus Christ coming back, and he's going to come, and what's he going to do on the Temple Mount?
Well, when he steps down on the Mount of Olives, Zechariah chapter 14, verse 4, it says that that Mount of Olives will split from the west to the east. That means the Temple Mount's destroyed. That means that tribulation temple is destroyed. The book of Ezekiel chapters 40 to 46, 202 detailed verses of how Messiah will build his temple. Zechariah chapter 6 and verse 12 says that Jesus will build the temple, and then verse 13, he will rule and reign from that temple. Zechariah 1 verse 16, Jesus said, "I am coming back to Jerusalem to build my temple." That will be the millennial temple. After his second coming, that thousand-year period of time when Jesus will rule and reign from the temple in Jerusalem. In Jerusalem.
In Jerusalem. Okay, last clip here, and then we can open it up and talk about it or get to some articles, whatever's clever.
Some of you may have no idea where I am right now, but to the Freemasons, this place is one of the most important buildings ever constructed. Join us as we explore the story it has to tell and the lessons we can learn from it.
Okay, so what we were just looking at was the speaker standing in front of a scaled-down model of Solomon's Temple at a Freemason Hall in Battle Creek, Michigan. I put a video up on From the Trenches a week or two ago about it. You can go take a look. Just a moment, and it will begin.
Hello, my name is Dirk Hughes, director of the Michigan Masonic Museum and Library. In this episode of Masonic Education, we're going to be discussing the significance of King Solomon's Temple within Freemasonry and how the idea of it is integral to the teachings of our fraternity. Though we can trace the beginning of modern Freemasonry to the formation of the first Grand Lodge of England in 1717, and there is evidence the fraternity evolved from the medieval trade guilds of operative stonemasons hundreds of years before that, we Freemasons tie our allegorical origins and the foundations of our symbolic learning system to the building of King Solomon's Temple about 3,000 years ago. The three degrees of the symbolic lodge, the Entered Apprentice, Fellowcraft, and Master Mason, along with many other degrees throughout the appendant Masonic bodies, are inextricably connected to not only the process of building King Solomon's Temple, but also the metaphorical implications of what that historical structure represents. The Hebrew Bible, or Old Testament, tells us that King Solomon built the temple in Jerusalem based on plans given by God to his father, King David, as a permanent resting place for the Ark of the Covenant, the chest used to carry the two tablets of stone on which the Ten Commandments were written and said to have been received by Moses on Mount Sinai. No one really knows what that first temple truly looked like, though there have been calculated guesses based on measurements and descriptions from sacred writings. Archaeological evidence has been hard to come by, because the original temple was destroyed by the Babylonians hundreds of years before the Common Era. During the thousand years after the temple's destruction, the site saw a number of other sacred buildings built upon it, a site which has become revered by the Jewish, Christian, and Islamic faiths that have in turn controlled the area separately at various times in history, impeding scientific study of earlier construction. Regardless, the story of building this first temple by King Solomon, with the help of his master builder Hiram Abiff and Hiram, King of Tyre, is the origin from which almost all our Masonic rituals and symbolism can be traced. From the apprentices and craftsmen who quarried, prepared, and assembled the stones to build it, to the master masons who drew the designs for them to follow. Our ritual uses the building of King Solomon's temple allegorically to promote the building of character that is the focus of our teachings. The physical temple itself exemplified what can be accomplished by different people when they work together in harmony. But maybe more importantly, it continues to act as a symbol today of how we as individuals, following the plans of the Grand Architect of the Universe, while using the right tools, diligence, and skill, can build our own temples of character for a better future. So you see, we Freemasons think of King Solomon's temple as a metaphor for building better lives, better relationships, and a better world.
Bullshit.
I'm Dirk Hughes with the Michigan Masonic Museum and Library. Until next time.
Okay, that was that. Let me fade it out. Now, I thought I heard somebody trying to come up real quick. Was somebody talking? And anybody who wants to, feel free to unmute. I'm going to start with this article that was posted at FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com yesterday, August 24th. It was sent in by Brandon Ward. It's titled, Students Suspended, Expelled for Playing Jew vs. Nazis Beer Pong Off Campus. So we'll read his web notes to begin. Free speech, personal liberty, not in America in the year of 2017. Maybe it's not your game of choice, but these guys were off campus on their own time. No one has a right to expel them because of this. When people start telling you what is right and wrong, you should not only question it, you shout it down. We already have the Bible and something called the Constitution. Continually, we see it whittled down and told it is racist. Stop being politically correct. If someone has a bunch of you, know what's coming out of their mouth, shut them down, call it for what it is. Calling something racist is done in order to silence you or some group of people. No one wants to be called a racist, so those being called racist will tend to stand down. Do not do that. You present the facts. Facts are facts. So, students from the Atlanta private school are facing disciplinary action after a photo posted online shows them playing a game of Jews versus Nazis beer pong at an off-campus house party. Channel 2 Action News confirmed the photo students of the Lovett School playing the game earlier this month. The picture clearly shows cups filled with beer in the shape of a Jewish star on one side of the table and a Nazi swastika on the other. Now, how petty is that? How petty is that to suspend somebody, expel somebody because of that? Because of just invoking these images? These people should be fighting. They shouldn't let this go down without a fight. And with that, we've reached our bottom of the hour break. We'll be back in about 8 minutes, folks, so just hold tight.
All right, everybody, let's show them how we do it here in Tucson, Arizona. Please welcome, all the way from Kazakhstan, they are Baroque and his cowboy Astana band. Give them a nice round of hoot and holler and holler.
This is a song called Namogzrobić Domofon. It's been in my country, there is a problem. In my country, there is a problem. And that problem is transport. It takes very, very long. Because Kazakhstan is big, throw transport down the well.
Come on!
So my country can be free, so my country can be free. We must make travel easy, then we have a big party. In my country there is problem, and that problem is the Jew. They take everybody money, they never give it back. Throw the Jew down the well, so my country can be free.
So my country can be free.
You must grab him by his horns, then we have a big party. If you see the Jew coming, you must these horns.
Then
we have a big party. Throw the dew down the well. So my country can be free.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disastrous situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just the conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Divergent Flavor Labs introduces our all-original e-juice flavor line made from pure 100% kosher USP food-grade ingredients. Whether it's our flavored tobaccos like Calypso or our amazing bakery flavors like Creme de Liumptious, Divergent Flavor Labs handmade all-original flavor line will never disappoint. Available exclusively through VaporsRebellion.com.
Thank you for listening to PBFTT.
Patriot Broadcast from the Trenches, 89.5.
Micro FM.
Chiloquin,
the state of Jefferson.
I've been drinking all day. Get pulled over, I way. Driving while drunk, not my fault, it's the Jews. I'm Mel fucking Gibson. About Israel, I'm bitching. Jews, Jews, Jews. They're cocksuckers and whores. Tel Aviv, we do not need you. Fuck you if you speak Hebrew. You killed Jesus Christ, so in hell, you'll be damned. Fuck your stupid Hanukkah. I'll shit in your yarmulke. Jews, Jews, Jews. You're the world's herpes sore. Palestine and Lebanon have got a real good plan. Won't you take the Jews and drive them into the sea? A stupid Jew. I'm too drunk to be walking, but Jews I am trash talking. Jews, 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 causing all the world's wars.
Fucking Jew.
Palestine and Lebanon have got a real good plan. Won't you take the Jews and drive them into the sea? Screw the Jews. Hollywood Jew are controlling. Mel Gibson, he loves Hezbollah. Jews, 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 they're cocksuckers and whores.
Jew? You? Fucking Jew? You? Fucking Jew? You? Fucking Jew? Fucking Jew? You? Fucking Jew?
I've been drinking all day. Got pulled over OAV. Driving while drunk. Not my fault. It's the Jews. I'm Mel fucking Gibson. On Israel I'm pissing. Jews, Jews, Jews. They're cocksuckers.
It's Time to Break Free is a listener-sponsored broadcast. If you'd like to help keep this program on the air, go to FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com and hit that donate button. Or you can mail donations to Henry Shively at Post Office Box 964, Chiloquin, Oregon 97624. Your contributions are appreciated. I'm your host, David Matthew Rock. It is 1:37 p.m. Arizona Mountain Time, and that was Ned Sings the Mel Gibson Jew Song, and you can find it on YouTube, at least for a little while, until the censorship kicks in, right? That's probably something they'd leave up there just so they can call us anti-Semites, but Oy Vey Friday is about having some fun, being politically incorrect, and it's about, you know, focusing in on the Jewish supremacists, a group of people who, generally speaking, happen to be pulling the strings of most of the governments and banks around this planet. So it's definitely an important subject, and it's something that we shouldn't stop talking about. But I tell you what, I was enjoying the open conversation going on last hour, the idea of talking about the divide and conquer that's going on amongst us. It's something that's important to me. I heard a radio host come up in last October talking about a nation under one God, and wouldn't that be a good thing if we had a nation under one God? And I picked up the telephone immediately and dialed in and called and tried to debate, you know, and I simply asked. I asked one simple question, and I did not get an answer to this question. One question. How do you plan on enforcing that? How do you enforce a nation under one God? And I had five people debating me. Okay, I was lucky if I could string one sentence together without getting interrupted. And they were talking all up and down about all these different things and historical reference, this and that and the other. Nobody had the balls to simply answer that question. How are you going to enforce your nation under one God? Huh? So, you know, if any of those people that I'm talking about want to come up and debate me on my program, I dare you to. Let's talk about it. And some other things I've been concerned about. That shooting of a senator on the baseball diamond. I can't remember the name of that piece of shit politician. I don't give a fuck. I don't pay any attention to them. But they had this Bernie Sanders supporter drive down from, I believe, Chicago and go to D.C. and take some shots at some of these Republican politicians playing baseball. I think if my memory serves me correct, even Rand Paul was one of them. And some other radio hosts I were hearing were trying to whip up their listeners into a frenzy about, oh my God, they're trying to attack Trump, and it's the dagger war, and it's this, and it's that, and blah, 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 and trying to get people to be concerned about it. But I'm kind of looking at it this way, right? Some people were theorizing that Soros paid for this individual to go do that. Okay, so let's just run with that. Okay, so the Bernie Sanders supporter nutcase from Chicago who did the shooting is a leftist communist socialist, so he's my enemy, okay? And he shot at the people that are covering up for 9/11, the people who are allowing private institutions to print our dollar, the people who are committing wars and atrocities all over the world, and the people who've all signed on to AIPAC, okay? So he shot at those people. Those fucking people are my enemy just the same. Okay, so if Soros, my enemy, paid some leftist lunatic communist, another one of my enemies, to go shoot at some right-winger neocon nutcase motherfuckers, then that's a win-win-win, right? I didn't have to pay for it. I didn't have to drive anywhere. I didn't have to expend a bullet or risk my life or any of that shit. And they're killing each other. It's a good thing. Why would I want to get caught up in the drama of that? It's a good thing. If they all got together and shot each other tomorrow, you know, we'd be in good shape. So I don't understand why we should get sucked into this divide and conquer shit. I don't give a shit whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. I don't like either of you. And as far as conservative and liberal, you know what? To me, those are empty vessels you can pour whatever the fuck you want into. Okay? You can make up whatever bullshit and pour it into there. What are you trying to conserve? The old world was pretty fucking evil, in my opinion. So what are you trying to conserve? Okay? And as far as being liberal and liberty, where did that word come from and what did it mean originally? Does it mean freedom? Does it really? Because I know there's some Freemasonic and Babylonian references to a goddess named Liberty. Okay? So did it ever mean freedom? And I know there's been discussion about in maritime law, it's a temporary leave. It's not freedom. It's, yeah, you can go bang a hooker and get drunk, but you got to be back by a certain time. You're on liberty. So if I'm wrong about anything I'm saying, you want to debate me, come up anytime. So this recent crap going on in Charlottesville, divide and conquer, okay? We got a bunch of really questionable people that started this Unite the Right, that pulled the permits for this Unite the Right. Jason Kessler, the man that came out of nowhere that only has three people on his Patreon, that gets all these wonderful interviews all over the place with big time names, okay, even though he's only been doing it for a year, who, when you look at his first YouTube video and you listen to the poetry that was coming out of his mouth, it was nothing but death and darkness. And I'm supposed to believe that that guy's legit. I'm supposed to believe David Duke is legit. I'm supposed to believe all these people are legit. They're taking our movement and dragging it through the mud. Okay, I have my personal feelings about race, but I'm not going to let them enter into the equation here because I want freedom for all. Okay, I don't give a shit what color you are. I'm from the leave me the fuck alone party. That's where I'm from. I'm not from the killing brown people for Jesus party, which seems to be more popular, apparently. So, like I said, feel free to come up and debate me. I got some articles to get into. We're just probably going to skim through them a little bit and not get too deep into the details here. These are all posted at FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com for discussion. Coming from the Jerusalem Post, posted today, August 25th, Frankfurt becomes first German city to ban anti-Semitic BDS movement. So, yeah, you go through the article and they discuss that on a municipal level, they're basically banning monies going to BDS movements and they're banning renting out government properties to BDS movements. But I'll tell you what, folks, if there's anything Israel's worried about, it's BDS. It's one of the biggest things they're worried about. And that tells me very clearly that boycotts work, okay? And boycotts can come in many forms. It's not just about money. It's about who you choose to talk to and be around and befriend. It's about what you choose to, where you choose to live. Okay? I'm boycotting the state of New York. I grew up there. It's many aspects of it are beautiful. In certain ways, I miss it, but I really don't have any interest in going back there. I don't have any interest in paying a single dime in taxes to New York. It's corrupt. It's disgusting. It's worn down. It's a rust belt bullshit area that I was living in. I was just slowly watching it being destroyed, watching them put the cameras up everywhere. And since 9/11, it just got crazy with the cops. I mean, I couldn't drive 1 mile without seeing a cop, and I couldn't drive 3 miles without seeing somebody pulled over. And if a day went by where that wasn't the case, it was rare. In Phoenix, Arizona, I lived in the heart of Phoenix, Arizona for a few years. That was never the case. Okay? You want to talk about discrimination? I've been pulled over while walking multiple times because of the way that I'm dressed. Now, I'm white. I got relatively fair skin. I can get a decent tan, but I definitely didn't have one at that particular time. I was wearing some BDUs, some camo BDUs, and a camouflaged parka. And I was just simply walking to the gym. And this wasn't too long ago. This was when I was getting ready to sell my house in 2014. I moved back to New York just temporarily to do some work on the house and prepare it for sale. So I'm walking to the gym. I get pulled over by this female cop just because of the way I look. And now, since this has happened to me before, I recognize a little pattern. They started with the same shit, okay? It's a phishing thing, right? Oh, we got some reports of break-ins in the area. We got some reports of vehicular break-ins and this, that, and the other. And you know what? That's probably true in every little neighborhood. You know, when I was 15 and bored, and this wasn't a good thing to do, but I did it. And I did it solely because I was bored and just looking for adventure. If I had something better to do, like work at a decent place, I probably would have done it. But I used to break into unlocked cars just for fun. It was called car shopping. Terrible thing to do, and I feel guilty for it. I definitely paid the price for it. But, yeah, every neighborhood, that happens. So this woman starts this fishing expedition with me. And I guess there's really no point to getting deep into the story, but even as a Caucasian person, you get harassed just because of the way you look. It's not necessarily a black and a white thing. But I tell you what, for police officers, it's easier for them to assume if you look like a poor black person, that officer is going to assume you're not connected, you're not, you know, you don't have money to back you up. So it's much easier for him to abuse you. Okay, like me, for example, my grandfather babysat one of the judges in the town that I grew up in. And this isn't a good thing, but this shows you how corrupt the whole system was. Because of that relationship, I was able to get thousands of dollars in tickets dropped. Okay, so I think part of the reason poor people and people of color get abused more often is they don't have the resources, and it's much easier to assume that you're not going to get sued and you're not going to get in trouble when you go crack some skulls. I know that's not the only reason, but I think it kind of enters into the equation. So anyway, I'm kind of going off in tangents here, but it's all good. Now, this next article, also posted at From the Trenches, worldreport.com, August 25th, coming from the Jerusalem Post. This one's quite interesting, and all of these articles coming out of mainstream media, you have to read in between the lines, okay? A lot of half-truth going on. Israeli doctors in the north are dedicated to saving Syrians. Okay, now what that means to me is not necessarily what this article is going to portray. What that means to me is that the Israeli doctors in the north are fixing up the people who are fighting Assad. Okay, yesterday I had an article, we didn't really get a chance to read it, but that's okay. It's on FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com, titled, 19 Israelis to have citizenship revoked for fighting with ISIS. Okay, so Israel, through its occupation of the Golan Heights, I'm sure it's aiding, abetting, and participating in this war to the north. It's part of their greater plan. But we'll get into the article for a little bit, and we'll see what it has to offer. A visit to a Narayana hospital treating victims of the civil war is both healing and harrowing. It is midnight on a cold winter night in the Syrian part of the Golan Heights. A strange caravan wends its way along. Oh, fuck all this. Hold on. Let's see if we can get into some actual details here. I just kind of skimmed through a lot of these articles. I don't go too deep into them. Yeah, okay. You know what? Let's just skip the details. This article came up just before Henry started his broadcast, and I think it's much more relative and much more interesting. This was sent in by number one New World Order hater. Doesn't really fit in with Oy Vey Friday, but whatever. It's my show. I can do what I want.
David?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. It's Katie. Yeah, I just wanted to catch you before you got into that article. I like the name of that new party.
Yeah, Leave Me the Fuck Alone
Party.
Leave
Me the... I love it. Yeah, good name. Just wanted to let you know.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's a simple... You know, keep it simple, stupid, as they say, right? Let's not try to overcomplicate it.
Yeah, it's perfect. I think a lot of people would love it. Yeah.
It's my only political desire. I don't have any desire to change what my neighbor's doing or to dominate another human being. I simply want to be left alone, and I can handle all of my business through contract. And I tell you what, folks, I kind of feel that because of police, because of the law, there's actually more crime, and I'll explain that. If we had vigilante justice in Hatfield and McCoy, okay, which is not necessarily a good thing, but if it existed, the consequences for not following through on a contract, the consequences for committing a crime become so much more severe and so much more immediate when there is no potentially law getting in the middle of it, that people will be scared into compliance. Or basically, you're not going to shake hands and make a deal with somebody unless you are absolutely intending on following through. You're not going to be sitting there thinking, oh, I can shiv this guy in the back because I got the cops to back me up. He'll never do anything. You know, this is too little money to really go to court, you know, or just be small claims court or whatever. So I don't really think he'll even bother. So if I screw him over, he's really got no recourse. And if he does anything to me physically, then I'll just file charges and have him put in jail. But if, like, say, for instance, somebody screws you over hardcore on a contract and you were to kill that dude, not saying that's the right thing to do, but every person around that person will know that story. And when they shake hands with somebody to do a contract, that's going to be in the back of their head. Hey, if I try to screw this person over, he just might come kill me. He might just come burn my freaking house down. Okay, so I'm kind of the belief, just based on logic alone, and feel free to tell me I'm wrong, that having this police state actually allows for more crime, more theft, more white-collar crime. Did you have any thoughts on that, Katie?
No, it makes sense to me. Yeah, definitely. I mean, of course, my mind goes back to, the common law court. I mean, if something happens, if somebody does defraud you in a contract, I mean, you take them through the common law court, and I guess your juries would have to be, they'd have to be honest and upfront to, bring penalties against the person. But yeah, I mean, if there was none of that, I mean, shooting them is the best way to deal with it, I think. It'll put the fear, put fear in people, and they won't, they won't screw you over or other people over.
Exactly.
That's me.
Fear is kind of the ultimate motivator, and I've been to the Knob Creek machine gun shoot a couple times. It's definitely worth going if you're in the area and you haven't been there yet. You get to put your hands on all sorts of different merchandise, and it's quite an impressive event. But there's no actual governmental police presence. They have security and all that stuff. But I'm of the belief that all rules come from property ownership, and where the Knob Creek machine gun shoot takes place, somebody owns that property. They get to make the rules. They get to enforce the rules. So we all walk in there, right? You can bring in any firearm you like. They're not running the serial numbers. They're not checking the trigger sears to see if it's fully automatic or any of that garbage. They take a look at it, make sure there's no bullet in the chamber, put a zip tie through it. And even if you didn't walk in with a firearm, they're there for purchase. You can buy them. You can buy Liberty Arms, which do not require any paperwork whatsoever. So you could be potentially an illegal alien and buy a damn firearm there. I'm not trying to encourage people to do that, but I'm saying that could be the case. So in this environment with so many weapons, you have no clue who's there. Anybody's there. Guaranteed there's government officials in there. Nobody causes any problems. Nobody starts any fights. Nobody's stealing any of the merchandise off the tables. People aren't even littering. People aren't swearing. People aren't pushing. Okay? And that's because I'm of the belief everybody's on the level. Everybody's equal. Everybody's heavily armed, and they're giving each other that mutual respect. Any thoughts?
That's beautiful. I want to live there. they say, a weapon is a great equalizer.
It sure is. And that's why we have to never let them take ours away. In the meantime, what can we do? We exercise our free speech, our freedom of the press. We get the word out there. We help raise people's spirits. We help educate people. We help bring people together, damn it, not drive them apart, so we can get people ready for this fight. And how this fight will come, it's hard to say. When it comes and how it comes, I'm no guru. I can't predict it. But, and on that thought, I want to encourage our listeners to be the press. We got that press badge on FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com. Feel free to use it. But not only that, anytime you come across an interesting article or an interesting video, send it in. Send it in to FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com so we can get it posted for everybody to see. We need to be the media. We need to be bigger than the media. We need to be better than the media. We need to take this model, like From the Trenches, WorldReport.com, and others, and replicate it many times over if we're going to succeed. So, yeah, freedom of the press was an integral part of freeing this society. So I probably don't really have much time to get back to any of my articles. But do you have it, or Katie or any of our callers have any thoughts on what they're seeing with divide and conquer this summer and what's going on with Trump since Trump's election and all that? So I kind of think Trump was put in place specifically for divide and conquer. I think they pushed the whole left side as far as they could. But what I'm finding interesting is these people who supposedly are anti-Israel and anti-Jewish supremacists are in support of Donald Trump. How is that possible? And I'll say this, the people who pulled that permit, the people who participated in the Unite the Right rally are behind Donald Trump and are anti-Zionist, anti-Jewish supremacy, and anti-Israel. How isn't that an oxymoron? How can those two different, how can the support of Trump and anti-Israel exist in your skull simultaneously at the same time? I don't think it's possible. And because of that, I'm going to call bullshit on all those people who started that protest. We need to unite, and I don't really care about right or left. I've never seen myself as either, and I think it's foolish to label ourselves. You know what I am? I'm free, and I'm alive, and I'm here, and I ain't going to shut up. You're going to have to put a bullet in me before that happens. So, yeah, we need to stop with the divide and conquer, folks. And if you feel the way that I do, and you're hearing it, you're hearing somebody pushing this divide and conquer bullshit, call them out. There's nothing to fear. You know, you might be a little nervous and have some butterflies in your stomach in the beginning if you're not used to calling people out, if you're not used to picking up the telephone and making a call. But just do it. Get over it. You know, get over the stage fright and use your voice. It's very powerful. I'm of the belief a single human being could turn this whole thing around with nothing but words. I think it's potentially possible that somebody could speak into existence just the right way at the right time with the right amount of charisma and just get the whole ball rolling. And I think the people who are in charge know that. And that's why they spend so much time controlling the press and controlling the airways and now, and probably since its inception, controlling the internet, which has definitely turned Big Brother. And with that said, I appreciate all of our callers. I appreciate all of our listeners. I'm glad you guys are with me all week, and I hope everybody has a wonderfully beautiful weekend, and they surely enjoy themselves. And with that said, we'll be back on Monday. Take care, everyone.